Welcome back, everybody. This is Food for Thought, Thoughts If It Were You, and this is your host, Neo Gentrix. Now, picking up where we left off from the last half, I told you we're covering diagnosis and staging for cancer, so people can at least be able to tell whether they have it or not, or what they're going to have to look forward to in the process of figuring out whether or not they have it. Now, before we go any further into this, I want to go ahead and let you know again what we're going to try to cover in today's episode. Prognosis is one of the things I'm going to cover next, right after this break. We're going to do that. After that, I'm going to cover questions that, you know, to ask about your diagnosis and research to follow. And if we still have time left over, like I mentioned in the last episode, I will cover tumor grade and pathology facts as well on your report. So, without further ado, we're going to go ahead and pick up where we left off here on Food for Thought. Again, this is your host, Neo Gentrix, and let's try to have a great rest of our day, all right? All right, everybody, let's get started. So, in the last episode, we covered for the diagnosis and staging process for finding out whether you have cancer or not. We covered the symptoms, the diagnosis, and the staging process. Now, you've gone through all of that, and I'm pretty sure at this point, if you've discovered you have cancer, you have questions about how serious your cancer is, your chances for survival, the estimate of how the disease will go for you. All that's called is the prognosis, okay? It can be hard to understand what prognosis means, and also hard to talk about even for doctors. So, let's go ahead and get started, okay? I'm going to try to give as much information as I can so you can understand what your prognosis is, okay? First things first, many factors can affect your prognosis, okay? Some of those factors affect the affect prognosis include the type of cancer, where it is in your body. The stage of the cancer, which refers to the size of the cancer and if it's spread to other parts of your body. The cancer's grade, which refers to how abnormal the cancer cells look under a microscope. Grade provides clues about how quickly the cancer is likely to grow and spread. And don't worry, I'll cover tumor grades later in this episode. Certain traits of the cancer cells also can affect your prognosis, your age, and how healthy you were before it, and how you respond to the treatment, okay? Now, if you're seeking information about your prognosis, that's up to you. It's a personal decision, okay? When you have cancer, you and your loved ones face many unknowns. Understanding the cancer, knowing what to expect, can help you and your loved ones make decisions. Some of the decisions you may have to face are like which treatment is best for you, do you even want treatment for that matter, and how best to take care of yourself and manage the treatment's side effects if there are any, and then how to deal with financial and legal matters regarding this, because it can get pretty pricey, like I mentioned before. Now, many people want to know their prognosis. They find it easier to cope when they know more about their cancer that they have. You may ask your doctor about survival statistics or search for this information on your own. It's up to you. Or you may find statistics confusing and frightening and think they're just too imperial to be of value to you in the first place. So it's up to you to decide how much information you even want in the first place. Now, if you decide to you want to know more, the doctor who knows the most about your situation is in the best position to discuss your prognosis and explain what the statistics may mean if you need to know. Okay? Now, if you need help coping with your prognosis, okay, that's something totally different on the side. Okay. Now, if need be, I will cover that as well. Next, you need to understand statistics about survival. Okay. Doctors estimate prognosis by statistics that researchers have collected over many years about people with the same type of that of cancer. Now, several types of statistics may be used to estimate prognosis. The most commonly used statistics include the following that I'm about to name for you. First thing is cancer-specific survival. This is the percentage of the patients with a specific type and stage of cancer who do not, who have not died from their cancer during a certain period of time after diagnosis. The period of time may be a year, 2 years, 5 years, etc. Now, with 5 years being the time period most often used, cancer-specific survival is often called disease-specific survival. And in most cases, cancer-specific survival is based on causes of death listed in medical records. The next one is relative survival. Now, this statistic is another method used to estimate cancer-specific survival that does not use information about the cause of death. Okay, it is the percentage of cancer patients who have survived for a certain period of time after diagnosis compared to people who do not have cancer. The next one is overall survival. Okay, this is the percentage of people with specific type and stage of cancer who do not who have not died from any cause during a certain period of time after diagnosis. The last one is disease-free survival. Now, disease-free survival. This statistic is the percentage of patients who do not, who have no signs of cancer during a certain period of time after treatment. Other names for the statistics are a recurrence-free or progression-free survival. Because statistics are based on large groups of people, they cannot be used to predict exactly what will happen to you. Everyone is different, and treatments and how people respond to those treatments can differ greatly. Also, it takes years to see the benefits of new treatments and ways of finding cancer. So the statistics your doctors use to make a prognosis may not be based on treatments being used today. Still, your doctor may tell you that you have a good prognosis if statistics show or suggest that your cancer is likely to respond well to the treatment. Or he may tell you that you have a poor prognosis if the cancer is harder to control. Whatever the doctor tells you, keep in mind that a prognosis is an educated guess. It's not exact. So your doctor cannot be certain how it will go for you, as everybody is completely different. Okay? Now, if you decide not to have treatment, the doctor knows, you know, the doctor knows your situation best, is the best position to, you know, the doctors are the best people to discuss your prognosis with in the first place, whether you decide not to have treatment or not. The survival statistics most often come from studies that compare treatments with others rather than treatment with no treatment. So it may not be easy for your doctor to give, you know, you an accurate prognosis in the first place.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? You are listening to the soulful sounds of Neogentrix, ladies and gentlemen. So hang in there, gather some knowledge, because knowledge is important, and it also is power. I'm your girl, the Guru Warrior. Peace. I am out.
All right, everybody, before I go on to the next step, which would be frequently asked questions, I want you to understand the difference between a cure and remission, okay? Cure means that there are no traces of your cancer after treatment, and the cancer will never come back. Remission means that the signs and symptoms of your cancer are reduced. Remission can be a partial or complete. In complete remission, all signs and symptoms of cancer have disappeared. If you remain in complete remission for 5 or more years, some doctors may say that you are cured. Still, some cancer cells can remain in your body for many years after treatment. Those cells may cause the cancer to come back one day. For cancers that return, most do so within the first 5 years after treatment, but there's a chance that cancer will come back later. For this reason, doctors cannot say for sure that you are cured. The most they can say is that there are no signs of cancer at this time. Because of the chance that the cancer can come back, your doctors will monitor you for many years and do tests to look for signs of cancer's return. They will do so. They will also do so and look for signs of late side effects from the cancer treatment you have received as well. Okay, just keep that in mind. Now, to move on with the next topic in here, questions to ask about your diagnosis. Learning that you have cancer can be a shock, and you may feel overwhelmed at first, but when you meet with your doctor, you hear a lot of information, and these questions may help you learn more about your cancer and what you can expect next. So remember to ask these, and if not, it's okay. Feel free to come back to this podcast anytime if you need to write these questions down again. Pause, rewind, whatever works for you. First things first, you need to ask what type of cancer you have. Okay, this is also very important. Next, you need to ask what the stage of your cancer is, so you know how far along it has come. Has it spread to any other parts of your body? This is also an important factor to keep in mind, as it can affect the way you go about your daily progression. Will I need more tests before treatment begins? And if so, which one? Specifically this question, if you want treatment. Now, if you do decide to get treatment and you know which treatments you need, the next question will be, will I need a specialist for my cancer treatment? If so, you need to know who it is and you need to do a background search on this person also to make sure it's someone that you know can do what they can do, or if they're just some beginner. Because you don't exactly want a novice, but you do want someone who's pretty skilled or at least knows what they're doing. Next question you need to ask is, will you help me find a doctor to give me another opinion on the best treatment plan for me as well? Don't just go with the first thing that they say. Always do a little extra research. It won't kill you, I promise, to find out any other options that you have. Okay? Next question you need to ask is, how serious is my cancer? You need to know how bad it is and just about how, you know, how much of a hurry you're in to start your treatment. The last question you need to ask is, what are my chances of survival? You need to know this specifically for the fact that you need to know whether or not treatment is possible or not. But then again, this also depends on the type of person you are. In my case, I believe in God, so I would still ask, even though I know that as long as I'm doing what I'm supposed to, and if God allows it, I'll survive. So, but that's, you know, in my case. For any of you other people out there, if you believe in God, then this should be the same for you, as long as you have unwavering faith and you believe. On the other hand, if you're one of those who doesn't believe God exists or don't believe the same God, you know, and you want to just take your chances anyway, go ahead and ask. If you decide to go ahead and with it, go for it. If not, then, you know, don't. And live the rest of your life in solace, knowing that you at least did what you could for the rest of, for your life up to this point. You can die peacefully, or try to make something of the last couple of years of your life that you have. Now, even though I covered prognosis and the questions to ask, there's something I want to go back and go ahead and cover, and that would be tumor grade. What's a tumor grade, you ask? Tumor grade is the description of a tumor based on how abnormal the tumor cells and the tumor tissue looks under a microscope. It's an indicator of how quickly a tumor is likely to grow and spread if the cells of the tumor and the organization of the tumor's tissues are close to those of normal cells and tissues. This tumor is what is called, well-differentiated. These tumors tend to grow and spread at a slower rate than tumors that are undifferentiated or poorly differentiated, which have abnormal-looking cells and may lack normal tissue structures to start with. Based on these and other differences in microscopic appearances, doctors assign a numeric grade to most cancers. Okay, the factors used to determine tumor grade can vary different types of can vary between different types of cancers, not campers. Tumor grade is not the same as the stage of cancer. Keep this in mind. Those are two different things. Cancer stage refers to the size or extent or reach of the original primary tumor, whether or not cancerous or not, or whether it has spread to your body or not. The cancerous stage is based on factors such as the location of the primary tumor, size, regional lymph nodes involvement, spread of the cancer to nearby lymph nodes, and the number of tumors present. Okay? Tumor grade is completely different. Now, how is a tumor grade determined? Well, if a tumor is suspected of being malignant, a doctor removes all or part of it during a procedure called a biopsy, which I explained before, and a pathologist, a doctor who identifies diseases by studying the cells and tissues under a microscope, then is, you know, examines the biopsied tissue to determine whether the tumor is benign or malignant. Now, the pathologist will also determine the tumor's grade and identify other characteristics of the tumor using the NCI fact sheet for pathology reports. Now, the pathology reports describes the type of information that can be found in a pathologist's report about the visual and microscopic examination of tissues removed during that biopsy or the surgery, whichever they have done. In that, they are also graded and then classified. Now, the grading system differs depending on the type of cancer. In general, tumors are graded on a 1 to 4 scale depending on the amount of abnormality that is found. In a grade 1 tumor, the tumor cells and the organization of the tumor tissue appear close to normal. These tumors tend to grow and spread very slowly. In contrast, the cells and tissues of a grade 3 and 4 tumor do not look like normal cells and tissue. Grade 3 and 4 tumors tend to grow rapidly and spread faster than the tumors with lower grades. Now, if a grading system for a tumor type is not specified, the following system that I'm about to give you is generally used, right? GX means grade cannot be assessed, it's undetermined. G1 means well differentiated, it's a low grade. G2 means moderately differentiated, it means it's an intermediate grade. As I mentioned before, G3 and G4 are poorly differentiated or undifferentiated. They're both high grade, okay? Now, what are some of the cancer type specific grading systems? Well, breast and prostate cancers are the most common types of cancers that have their own grading system separate from everyone else, okay? Breast cancer, in one regard, the doctors most often use the Nottingham grading system, also called the Elston-Ellis, a modification of the Scarf-Bloom-Richard grading system. That's nothing you need to know about right now. For breast cancer, now this grading system grades breast tumors based on the following features. Tubule formation, how much of the tumor tissue has normal breast milk duct structures. Nuclear grade, an evaluation of the size and shape of the nucleus of in the tumor. And mitotic rate, how many dividing cells are present, which is a measure of how fast the tumor cells are growing and dividing. Now, each of the categories gets a score between 1 and 3. A score of 1 means the cells and the tissue look almost normal, and the score of 3 means the cells and the tissues look the most abnormal. The scores for the three categories are then added, yielding a score of 3 to 9, okay? Three grades are possible, okay? A score 3 to 5 means low grade, 6 to 7, intermediate grade, or 8 to 9 high grade, so G1, G2, G3. The last one is prostate cancer, okay? The Gleason scoring system is used to grade prostate cancer, okay? It's based on the biopsy samples that are taken from the prostate, okay? The pathologist checks the samples to see how similar the tumor looks to normal prostate tissue. Both primary and secondary patterns of tissues are then identified, and then the primary pattern represents the most common tissue seen in the tumor, and the second pattern represents the most common next pattern that they have. Now, each pattern is given a grade from 1 to 5, with 1 being the most normal and 5 the abnormal. The two grades are then added to give the Gleason score, okay? Much like the last one, it works as follows. If you get a Gleason X, the score can't be determined. If it's 2 to 6, the tumor tissue is very differentiated. If it's 7, just a 7, the tumor is moderately differentiated. If it's 8 to 10, it is poorly differentiated. So it progressively gets, you know, worse. Okay? Now, last but not least, how does tumor grade affect a patient's treatment options? Well, doctors use tumor grade and other factors such as a cancer stage and patient's age and general health to develop treatment plans and determine the patient's prognosis. The most likely outcome and course of a disease, the change of recovery or recurrence. Generally, a low grade indicates a better prognosis than a higher one, obviously. Higher grade cancers may grow and spread more quickly and may require immediate or more aggressive treatment. Now, the importance of tumor grade is planning the treatment. The importance of a tumor grade goes in planning the treatment and determining a patient's prognosis. It's greater for certain types of cancers than for others, such as a soft tissue sarcoma, brain tumors, breast, and prostate cancer. So, with that being said, patients should talk to their doctor for more information about tumor grades and how it relates to their treatment and prognosis as well. Alright, so the last thing to go ahead and cover is the pathology reports, okay? First things first, what is a pathology report? Okay, the pathology report is a document that contains the diagnosis determined by examining cells and tissues under a microscope. That much is certain from what I've already covered. The report may also contain information about the size, shape, and appearance of a specimen as it looks to the naked eye. The information is known as a gross description. Very accurate. A pathologist is a doctor who does this examination and writes the pathology report. The pathology report plays an important role in cancer diagnosis and staging, as mentioned before, describing the extent of the cancer within the body, especially whether it has spread, which helps determine the treatment options. Now, how the tissue is obtained for the examination by pathologists, in most cases, doctors have to do a biology or surgery, biopsis, not biology, or a surgery to remove cells or tissues to examine using a microscope. Now, some common ways of doing that is with the needle, like I mentioned before, an endoscope, which is a thin light tube, and then surgery, obviously, which is pretty self-sufficient on its own. The tissue removed during the biopsy is sent to the pathology laboratory, where it's sliced into sections and viewed under a microscope. This is known as histologic tissue examination, and is usually the best way to tell if cancer is present. The pathologist may also examine cell material. The material is presented in urine, cerebrospinal fluid, which is the fluid around the brain and spinal cord, sputum, which is the mucus from the lungs, peritoneal abdominal cavity fluid, pleural, which is the chest cavity fluid, and cervical venereal smears and in fluid removed during a biopsy. Now, the tissue is processed after the biopsy. What happens to it? Is it frozen? Is it frozen in a section? So on and so forth. I've had people ask this. Well, first things first, the tissue is removed during a biopsy and surgery, which may be cut into thinner sections, placed in slices, stained with dyes before it can be examined under a microscope. The two methods are used to make the tissue firm enough to cut into thin sections, first of it, which is frozen sections, and the other is paraffin embedded or permanent sections. All tissue samples are prepared as permanent sections, but sometimes frozen sections are also prepared as well, just in case. Now, the permanent sections are prepared by placing the tissue in fixative or usually formalin to preserve the tissue, by processing it through additional solutions and then placing it in paraffin wax. After the wax is hardened, the tissue is cut into thin slices, which are then placed on slides and stained. The process normally takes several days, and a permanent section provides the best quality for examination by the pathologist and producing more accurate results than frozen. As for the frozen diagnostic, the frozen sections are prepared by freezing and slicing tissue samples. This can be done in about 15-20 minutes while the patient is in the operating room across the hall. Frozen sections are done with an immediate answer is needed. So, for example, to determine whether the tissue is cancerous so as to guide the surgeon during the course of an operation. How long after the tissue sample is taken will the pathology report be ready? Well, the pathologist sends a report to the doctor within 10 days after the biopsy or surgery is performed. The reports are written in technical medical language for them to understand, and patients may want to ask their doctors to give them a copy of the report to explain and also explain the report to them, for those who are actually interested. Patients who also may wish to keep a copy of their report in their records as well may also do so. So, with that being said, what information does the report usually include? This report may include the following items I'm going to list to you right now. The patient's name, information such as name, birth date, biopsy date, gross descriptions such as the color, weight, and size of the tissue, like I said, as seen by the naked eye. The microscopic description, how the sample looks under the microscope and how it compares to the normal cells. A diagnosis, which is the type of tumor and grade. We covered that already. The tumor size, measured in centimeters, of course, as inches is way too big. The tumor's margins, there are three possible findings when the biopsy sample is the entire tumor. When that's the case, there are positive margins, means that the cancer cells are found on the edge of the material removed. There is negative, not involved, clear or free margins, means that no cancer cells are found on the outer edges. And one they call close margins are negative, neither negative nor positive, okay? Other information that's usually on the pathology report usually notes about samples that have been sent for other tests or second opinions. the pathologist's signature, name, and address of the laboratory that was used. Now, what the report says about the physical and chemical characteristics of the tissue is completely separate. Okay? After they usually identify the cancerous tissue, the pathologist may perform additional tests to get information about the tumor that cannot be determined by looking at the tissue through routine stains, such as the hemotoxylin, or H&E as it's known. Okay. The report will include the results of these tests as well. It may also include information obtained from the immunochemical stains, the IHCs. They use antibodies to identify specific antigens on the surface of cancerous cells. It can usually determine where the cancer started, distinguish among different cancer types, such as carcinoma, melanoma, lymphoma, and so on and so forth. It can also help diagnose and clarify leukemias and lymphomas. Now, the report may also include the flow cytometry, which is the method of measuring properties of cells in a sample, okay? Including the number of cells, percentages of live cells, cell size, shape, and the presence of tumor markers on the cell surface. Now, the markers are substances produced by the tumor itself or by other cells in the body's response to the cancer or certain non-cancerous conditions. The cytometry can be used in diagnosis, classification, and management of the cancers, such as acute leukemia, chronic lymphoproliferative disorders, and non-Hodgkin's lymphomas. So, it also can include information on the genetics of the cells as well, and it can also help you decide whether or not you want a second opinion about the report as well. There's so much information that goes into these that I don't really have enough time here on this podcast to cover everything. But just to wrap it up real nicely and keep it as simple as I can, most of the information in the report that I've given you is pretty much accessible, and it shouldn't take a doctor no more than 15 minutes to explain everything, depending on your current knowledge of most of this information anyway. There are research being done right now to improve the diagnosis of cancer and make it easier for people to understand what they have. So don't be discouraged by what you hear here. Just keep your chin up and keep praying. Staging and the diagnosis of cancer. I've covered everything I possibly could think of in the last couple of episodes of what is cancer and how to deal with the symptoms and such, what they are, the diagnosis, and so on and so forth. And like I said before, for this entire series here, I'm going to be covering nothing but cancer, different types, what their symptoms are, so on and so forth. All you have to do is request what you want to hear. Next time on my podcast, in the next episode, I'll be covering coping with cancer, okay? Because, some people don't know how to do it or want to know how to cope with cancer, and I feel like it'll be a good episode to cover. So, look forward to the next episode, everybody. This has been Food for Thought, Thoughts If It Were You. I'm your host, Neo Gentrix. If you have any comments, concerns, or any podcast topics you want to hit me up with, check it out on my Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or my social media pages for Patreon and so forth, searching NEOGENTRICS, Neo Gentrix. Have a great rest of your day.